Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet George Gaida. George Gaida is the author of 7 books, including The Pope's Stories and Other Tales of Troubled Times, Bordighera Press, 2012, and 4 collections of poems, Pugilistic, published by Word Tech Editions, 2015, The Sleeping Gulf, Bordighera Press, 2015, New York and Other Lovers, and Low Italian. His fiction and poetry appear in Alimentum, Barrow Street, Harper Palette, Inkwell, J Journal, Literature and Gender, Poetry Daily, River River, Verse Daily, and other journals and anthologies. He teaches literature and writing at New York City College of Technology and co-edits Two Bridges Review. Hi, George. How are you?
Hi, Jan. How are you?
Good. We're really happy to have you here.
Thank you.
I think this is your first time on Prosody.
Indeed.
And so really anxious to hear your poem. So go ahead.
Okay. I'll start with one from Pugilistic in honor of opening day. Lose. I've always loved the Yankees. So this is my message to them. Lose. Just lose. Lose and lose. Lose and lose and lose. Keep on losing even when you can win. Lose like you'll never win again. Lose all the games you play, even the ones in your heads. Lose to teams with half your payroll, and don't even think about October. Lose all your games in May and June. Lose 9 out of 10 on a West Coast swing. Drink yourself sick on the plane ride back and get swept in a 12-game homestand. When your next great prospect comes along, rush him to the majors and blow out his arm. Or shake his confidence by yanking him with 2 strikes on a batter so that when you need him in a big game, he implodes. Or just lose before that. So big games are fading memories of glory. Forget your tradition. Forget your penance. Lose with swings as mighty as the Babe's. Juggle the lineup and lose anyway. When your best hitter's healthy, bat him 9th. Take your starter off a pitch count. Let your closer pitch 3 innings a game. Give the catcher some time in center field. When you're sick of losing, fire the manager and replace him with a coach from single A. Sell out your season tickets. Raise the prices of all concessions. Sign an even bigger broadcast deal. Print World Series tickets 8 months in advance. Then lose, lose, lose. Until all players' shoulders slump. Until they blame one another in post-game interviews. Lose until the stands are empty, until everyone is traded away and no one cares. Lose until the owner has to sell and the once proud franchise is buried beneath a new name in a glass boomtown where they're reinventing the game. Then come back as shades and fill their rookies with self-doubt. But begin by losing today. Muff a lazy fly to left. Give up a leadoff walk. Strike out with the bases loaded. Run through the stop sign. Lose, lose, and lose some more. Please, reward our loyalty. Show us some respect. Show us that you're with us. Show us how baseball is life. This next one is also from Pugilistic. Cards. The thumb cuts in rectangles, ovals, fish-shaped starbursts, slap thick air, a leather strap of games you'd play if you had better things to do and a partner, careless of pots or going out fast or 10 other classes you should know of chance, banking, casino, vying, testing, patience. As the dealer recalls the rules, collecting, rummy, stops, adding, fishing, and trick. Yes? Trick. Four suits in English and French, hearts extended. Do you want to hear this? To German. Huddle at tables where beer keeps victims' blood at bay. Cups, coins, crowns, castles, pikes, and would you guess, swords for the Italian and Spanish, batons for the former, for the latter, common clubs. They told us kids this would keep us entertained. The cut, shuffle, draw, feign, and call would save us. Instead of making fetuses doomed to scrapes, we'd learn sportsmanship and etiquette of play, starting with rummy, with discard, children's sense of words at root, ignorance of melds and loss. Then Vatican, Vint, Kaluki, Lou, Pink Nine, Spinato, Pip Pip, Oh Hell, and Knockout West. Most of these conceit, as if we'd hewed in names, not fluttered a stud like thinly whiskered moths. Imagine the Jack of Swords, all calculus and instinct, leapt from a dull boy's hand to slice a deuce of diamonds. Whose brain conceived this? Handjazz, clabberjazz, fragments of music, brag, slobberhannes, spite and malice, marjolet. Whose nasty little secrets hidden up sleeves? Whose prescient ruse that tarot cards intended to amuse would empower the wicked fool? Unfinished novena. Day 7 with my father. I find rosary beads in the shower. I find my father, eyes closed in a rocking chair, as day surrenders. All day long, he has stood among the younger men as they cut and nail. He's cut 2x4s and stood them against a wall for another day. On other days, he stood among wood and tools while men's eyes followed him. Today, he watches them run new pipes and wires for an aging house. Old age is not tragedy when prayers fill your shower with carved wooden beads. You are not the chain, Father, of syllables rehearsed apart from the world. You are the plumber, telling stories of shower stalls that betrayed him. The betrayal itself is joy incarnate, coffee cup in hand to tell. My father narrates toward possibility at the open wall. He opens his box for a hammer to teach creation again. His tail is a stick ruler snapping across spans as the creak of bones. This week has been his bones inside me singing like parishioners. Like parishioners, we pray for electricians burnt to light us all. We are all burning, Father, slowly back to what we had always been. We are the droplets on the beads, the blessings you left us to complete. This next one is called Friars Club Conscience. May be useful to know that the Friars Club is a club for comedians in New York City. It was actually the original title of this collection. Friars Club Conscience. The fat man made his fortune in the West, but started in New Jersey like the rest here. And not just the comics you'd expect, but steakhouse owners and realty tycoons who like a good laugh as much as you with your terrific sense of humor, who know and adore the borscht belt scarlet swizzle sticks tinkle on the polished oak bar and the hoarse guffaws of the mogul's escort. She's an aerobics guru and a great gal, he says, saying gal as often as he can because it beats broad in this day and age when all are thrust at the sincere end in sarcasm before they start to help you reach the level of empathy an impressionist feels for a midget act with whom he shared too many Catskills bills to remember, as if anyone could, what the Catskills were and why it was named the Friars Club, press agents kibitzing, hold on, I'll tell you, and how you met him, the fat man, through your wife's platinum blonde girlfriend, when all month long have come armies of requisitions for office supplies and caniches the size of Cadillacs which comic apparitions would smuggle from good Jewish delis, like one-liners about shrewish wives who, it's funny you think, didn't look shrewish in photos shot elsewhere, or their husbands could not have been buoyant enough to perform like six-year-old boys doing puppet shows of lawsuits, wrinkles, and bodily functions essential as scotch and the blessings of Milties, Sheckies, and Reds, who agreed that priests and rebbies were worth their weight in two-tone limousines. Praise him for the footed cab fare and names dropped as lightly from the lips as white mints melt in wakes of Manhattans. If he lives in Phoenix, does this mean he only cares about the struggle to erect this shrine to banter and cigars when he's around? Believe in him as a habit of mind, an ear for others' plight, a punchline rich and tried as rectum, shoot, damn near killed him.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet George Gaida, reading his poetry. George, I wanted to ask you about the voice in your poems. You know, I just kept feeling like this is a voice that has seen a whole lot. I just kept feeling that over and over, like this is a voice, not so much a voice of experience, but I mean it is, but a voice that has just seen things and is not just reporting, but telling us how it is. I don't know if that rings true at all for you.
Yeah. The title, Pugilistic, comes out of the spirit of the book. It's a book about surviving a lot of experiences and how you maybe do that and maybe the attitude that comes out of it. I don't think it's a bitter book, but I think it is about that hard-won experience, that hard-won sense of having survived, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, no, it didn't seem bitter. It didn't really seem sarcastic. But I kept feeling also this sense of naming things, like this is this, you know, this is what it is. It's, mm-hmm. you know, don't call it anything else, you know, sort of stripping away what's not true.
Yeah.
As you were writing these poems, did you know that that's what you were doing?
I think so. A lot of these poems were written in the wake of some experiences that I think a lot of people go through. For me, that would have been divorce and entering middle age and adjusting. There was a lot of adjustment going on in this book. Yes.
Why does that seem like a euphemism right now?
Yes. Right. Adjustment. Okay. Yeah.
Also known as survival.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Survive in advance is what they say at the basketball tournaments, right? Survive in advance.
No, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. In any tournament, the idea is to survive in advance. So survive the battle, and then you get to live and fight another day.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, sports seems to be big.
That metaphor is definitely, it's on the cover of the book. It's in the title. And I think, you know, it's a metaphor that's almost unavoidable in our culture, it seems to me. It's become
quasi-religious. Yes, and many people would not use it, too.
Right.
I mean.
Right. Well, it's sort of like writing a poem about dogs. You're not really supposed to write a poem about dogs or cats either, but I don't really see why not if you do it artfully.
So, right.
Right.
And yet the book was going to be named The Friars Club?
Friars Club Conscience.
Okay.
So kind of this idea, I'll quote Bill Hayne, who said it was a grievously comic book, and that's how I think I originally perceived it, as being kind of grievously comic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be called that. It was taken by a publisher, the name of which I won't mention. And then this publisher sort of vanished. And I had to retitle it and repackage it and reconceive it. And it landed on its feet, I think, I hope.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, could you read more poems?
Sure, sure. This one's called Quiero Cruzar la Bahía, which means I want to cross the bay. It's from a Sevillana of the same name. If I wanted to cross the bay, would you wonder why? Would you believe that the fishermen had indeed arrived? The fishermen, until now, had barely crossed my mind. Flamenco has kept me distracted, satisfied, and free. I sometimes dance on my iron balcony while tourists watch. When I finish, I stamp my feet and sing the final line. The Spanish ruled for 50 years, then crossed the ocean home. The Africans and French kept on with the ballet. In my blind eye, I see them. As the rhythm marks time and its uses, horchata de chufa, chicory, beignet. You seem so Spanish, the grand dame in the plaza swore. So I have spent my life seeming to stroll just so. The young diviner claimed I had an ancient soul around for the seventh time with a blue healing aura. If I say I haven't healed and can't recall the wounds, would you then believe I'm ready to cross the bay? Most people here are better self-taught than I, on guitars or spoons or in expressions of regret. They sport their ache and wonder in slow nods and plumes. They plan second lines with almuerzo on the porch. As always, the Anglos concoct their genteel quarters upriver from white rivieras and black bayous. I've struggled with my inner Creole on their patios. Will there be room to practice my castanets and patois? The living statues are smoking at the streetcar stop. The time for standing still is past. The silver one steps to me. Smile, he said yesterday. You and your friends are about to be wiped off the face of the earth. Natural causes. Oh, Bahia, I can't quite see your glimmer from here. The new condominiums are blocking my view. The festival begins today at the cathedral's feet with triolet blues and mojitos for golden tourists. I want to cross the street before the marching band arrives, to play the song that swivels native hips like pendulums. Yesterday, I was absent-minded griot as a cock strutting around courthouse corner caught me by surprise. Voodoo's done the imagining so long I can't recall myself and childhood spells, conjurations, and charms. The truth is, I don't choose boulevards to cross. Anyone will lead you to the levees and the shore. Look at this bastard American, the ship's captain growled when I disembarked with nothing but promissory notes. The Spanish built the fort to keep the pirates from the bay. I can't name every treasure and thought we've come to steal. Watch as I do my redoble and paso de cigüeña. My eyes should tell you I have rhythm instead of friends. When you see the fishermen promenade their catch again, tell them I'm greeting the heart's desire only from afar. You light up my life. This is an epigraph. The Oscar-winning You Light Up My Life composer, who was awaiting trial for rape while his son faced a murder rap, killed himself yesterday in his Upper East Side apartment. New York Daily News, May 23rd, 2011. A ballad nailed by the daughter of a pop heartthrob, the song spent weeks at number one. In the back of our sour sedan, crawling past Coney Island's frail neon, from the mouths of parents fled from Brooklyn childhood dreams, the Boons, Debbie and Pat, were the song's only kin. Its start, a smiling lover summoned from afar, that I should have guessed would be my stock in trade. by the way I let melody fill the car with clouds and the darkness of Jamaica Bay bathe us in woe. As we do, Debbie Boone was singing to God in 3/4 time, the way a mother moves through the room of a child she loves and loathes. Debbie Boone was all of 21 when she sang of a lonely man's needs invested in a ghost come back to haunt him in movie flops and a murderous son in estranged wives and strings of prostitutes and charges of rape and panned biography. My mother sang along in C minor. My father drove back to the suburbs, away from the widows who waited by windows for nieces to appear. My mother smiled and hated their model faith. Now to see her struggle to her feet, reach for the cane, and talk of how she once could beat the world, I wonder how she's grown as old as a composer in his final throes of passion and self-doubt. He won an Oscar. She sang the gospel. The song returns in a film called Happiness, sung by a deadpan Russian immigrant like the ones who took my parents' city place. He is trying to get laid and does. What if the artist had missed that value in his art? There might have been no phony casting calls, no false hope, no couch, no acrid breath of an old man on Viagra bearing down. My mother would not have believed, would have left her lover far behind, become an evangelical chanteuse, small business chrysalis, or appeals court judge whose own life story you could Google too.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet George Guider, reading from his book, Pugilistic. I'm struck by a lot of the sound and the punch in your lines. And in this last poem, it was, I think I lost it, it was chanteuse.
Evangelical chanteuse.
And in the next line there was...
I have to cheat.
An S word also.
Chanteuse. Yeah, evangelical business chrysalis.
Chrysalis and chanteuse. I'm like, wow. Yeah. You know, I mean, words that you don't hear often interacting with each other.
And that's true.
So I love all the sound moving around in your work.
Thank you.
And the other thing that I wanted to be sure to mention was, I mean, I'm sure you know this, is the interaction between the power of statement and the use of question. You have a lot of questions in your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not that usual to have all those questions.
I have a lot of questions about everything, Jan.
Well, me too. But I don't.
With
I don't.
Age does not necessarily come great wisdom.
I know. well, and yet many people don't acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So the honesty that comes through in your work is great. But I was feeling a lot of sadness too coming through.
Mm.
Like maybe not on top of the poems, but I was feeling it. Moving around.
If I could say it, I think that even at those moments when we're at our best, like the composer of You Light Up My Life, there's a certain sadness in understanding that this is as good as human beings can ever be. And I think it's why I watch sports, getting back to this. It's as good as it's ever going to be, that feeling of euphoria of having accomplished something, and yet we're very small.
You're making me sad now.
I'm sorry. It's not... Living with it is the trick, right? That's the trick, the happy trick.
I guess it's, say that again.
So
this is as good as we're. As
well, that moment of experiencing the height of human achievement,
okay.
Whatever that is.
And you're speaking of that in terms of sports.
No, it could be anything. It could be writing a song and recording a song.
Okay.
Just that glorious moment when an artist or anybody is in her or his full glory.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a limitation to that. It's what human beings can be, which is wonderful, and at the same time is also limited. And it's a sadness, it's a joyous sadness.
Okay, so, but why would you put that limitation on that moment of glory? That's hard to get to.
I think there's a novelist, I was talking to a novelist who said this to me, that all great novelists are religious in the sense that they feel the pressure of infinitude bearing down on any events that they are portraying in their work. That's what I think I mean. Right, I think.
It's reminding me of Woody Allen a little bit.
Oh, no. I like Woody Allen. Okay. I have no problem with Woody Allen.
Well, that moment sometimes where he talks about all I want to do is drive into the barrier on the highway. That
oh, right. Moment? That's in Annie Hall. Right, yeah. In Annie Hall, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, never mind. But I was
like, Christopher Walken.
We have to talk about this some more.
Okay.
Okay. This is complicated.
I didn't mean to bring anybody down.
No, no, sorry, it's complicated that, in a good way.
Okay.
Okay. So can you read some more poems?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I'll go to my other book, and maybe that'll change the tone a little bit. This book's called The Sleeping Gulf, about various kinds of gulfs that people experience. First poem is called Camps. If my son should make it through, he'll earn badges, place, geometry. He'll meet those dead grandparents at the dock who'll spot the sad brown eyes and tremble with regret. We'll mute the news to keep him borderless from coyotes and their promises and killing sands. My son's gaze evades patrols, fixing on a fence to scale as he's been trained to do. His faith is the twitch of a prairie dog's nose. The scoutmaster lures him with martial fingers. We pull out our stash of yellowed maps, pull up on screens the watermelon capital of Texas. Construction's begun there on the center for guests, where our son will sleep if he makes it through. It's not the interned children who kill themselves. It's the mothers who have danced in dusty streets as brides in gowns made of shrouded prayers. The scout's bonfire weds youth and death. At his camp on the tranquil sound, my son has built a pyre of ancestors' hails from moon and song. He is the grounded eagle lit in orange and blue as foreign eyes assimilate the night-blown ash. If my son should soar above a village square where his thoughts are born in Sabbath strangers' mouths, he would soon descend to the quarantine shore where his oaths would sound like shrieking at the city's edge. If my son should make it through these hollow doors, will he look behind for those hands and stars beyond his tent? Or will he burn and rise like smoke above the circle and sovereign ascend?
The poetry of George Gaida. Thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.